Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And today, Sonia, we are talking about the third season, episode 11, the 37th episode overall of the X-Men Task Podcast, Obsession, by Calvin Klein. And happy birthday to you.
Oh, thank you.
It is Sonia's birthday, everybody, so we are all happy about that. Any birthday words of wisdom you have to share with us before we delve deep into this episode?
Never follow Archangel into a compromising situation against an eternal being.
How weirdly apropos.
That's what I've learned in all these years of life.
Really puts things in perspective, doesn't it?
Sure does.
Yeah, so, I mean, funny you should mention our old pal Archangel.
What a coincidence.
We are back on track here with the X-Men and the further adventures of Archangel, the blue-skin, blonde-haired billionaire, Warren Worthington III.
No longer Warren Worthington, as he says.
Right, yeah. That was in the flashback he says that.
Yeah,
he's reclaimed his Warren Worthington III name along with its many bank accounts.
Okay.
Because he needs that money to fund his research against Apocalypse.
Right.
Who he is now, like, completely obsessed with killing.
Yep.
So, I mean, when we last saw Archangel, you know, the X-Men defeated the Four Horsemen and Apocalypse. The X-Men defeated the Four Horsemen. Apocalypse just stood there and watched, and when they failed, he just flew away.
Right.
Even though he could
inexplicably.
Right. He could have just easily have killed the X-Men. But whatever. But and the way they defeated Archangel's Rogue absorbed his energy. So by doing so, that like removed the weird like mind curse that was on Archangel.
Right.
That made him Apocalypse's slave.
Right. She like turned into a blue-faced woman for a minute, and then like. Archangel's mind control was gone.
Right, yeah. So he, like, regained his like, self-possession, I guess.
Yeah.
Not so much his sanity.
Right.
So that's important to note that Rogue and Archangel had that interaction, as the episode reminds us.
Right.
Cut to now, the present. Archangel is funding a group of highly paid
archaeologists.
Yeah, archaeologists and historians to dig up everything they can about Apocalypse, which is cool because it reminds the audience more explicitly that Apocalypse is this guy that's lived for a long ass time.
Right.
Yeah, so they, you know, they find ancient Egyptian like hieroglyphic stone tablets that show Apocalypse in his sort of Egyptian garb.
Right, and then another historian comes in with scrolls from ancient China.
Yeah, the Ming Dynasty.
The weak spot on the back of Apocalypse's neck.
Let's pump the brakes a second. That's the key piece of evidence.
Yeah, but that happens next.
Right. Well, okay. it's established that with these first antiquities that all the tablets say the same thing, that Apocalypse is invincible.
Right, okay.
And Archangel's not accepting that whatsoever.
Yeah.
So then, like, this guy mysteriously comes in a flash of lightning outside the door. this nerdy man, historian man, he has scrolls from the Ming Dynasty that claim that there's a weak spot on Apocalypse's back.
Right.
And that if only you pierce it, then he shall be no more.
Right.
So it's it's a question as to how these ancient peoples
could have possibly known all that information.
Yeah. It's like Apocalypse must have been drunk at a bar and told somebody. Like,
yeah.
You know, if you want to kill me,
here's the way.
I've got a real sore spot on my back. I can't, you know, I could put a piece of plywood over it, but it's just too much trouble.
Yeah.
So Archangel immediately accepts this information without any sort of it being qualified or, you know, whatsoever. So he sets off on his journey for total revenge.
Right.
I think it's actually a really cool, scene setting. A character backstory in Apocalypse and on Archangel 2. It's like just a nice, like, establishing all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of depth to these characters.
Yeah.
It just so happens that as Archangel discovers this information, Apocalypse has appeared on Liberty Island, right next to the Statue of Liberty.
Right.
Coincidentally. And so Archangel sets off to fight him.
Mm-hmm.
The X-Men are monitoring this situation, believe it or not, with their new Shi'ar technology.
Yeah.
And that's kind of an interesting little subtle plot point introduced in the background that... And the computer at the X-Mansion even acknowledges it itself. They're like, new Shi'ar probes detect Apocalypse on Liberty Island. Also detecting Archangel is fighting him.
Right, so, yeah. It's pretty cool.
Right, so it seems that since the X-Men last tangled with the Shi'ar, Lilandra gave them some parting gifts.
Yep.
Some, like, great technology that they've used to upgrade all their mainframes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's stuff that is also very true in the comic books. The X-Men are gifted many Shi'ar technology stuff, mainly things pertaining to the Danger Room, I would say. They're given like advanced artificial intelligence in the Danger Room and hard laser-like technology that makes holodecks or whatever.
Huh.
So it's cool that the show's like carrying on that comic book tradition.
Yeah.
That the X-Men are like...
they're benefiting from their interchange.
Yeah, they don't really have a Tony Stark or a Reed Richards to
right.
like give them amazing technology, but they do have an advanced alien species technology.
Cool.
Yep. So Archangel is fighting the Statue of Liberty. Gambit in the Cerebro room is commenting on this. He's like, he's taking on Apocalypse. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And Gambit's alarm level is extremely high in this episode. I want to say off the bat. He does not like Archangel. He is afraid of Apocalypse. And he is not like the sort of happy-go-lucky rogue. Not to use the word rogue, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Rogue type in
right.
this episode. He's very much in the Cyclops mold in this episode. Very
yeah.
careful and, like, even...
As he should be, though.
Right, yeah.
Apocalypse is it, you know.
I'm just saying that you could... But Gambit's character could be interpreted in different ways, though. He could be the guy that goes off, like, half-cocked and...
That's true, but I think also there's an element of jealousy because, like...
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because Archangel and Rogue share this, like, spiritual connection since she...
Right.
Like,
yeah, well, that's established, yeah.
Absorbed, you know, part of his powers or whatever.
His consciousness.
Yeah,
yeah,
his consciousness. So it's like he doesn't have that connection with Rogue. And
right. We see at moments when Rogue and Archangel are interacting in this episode, their eyes are sparkling when they talk to each other.
Yeah, it's really funny.
There's a lot of
twinkle in their eye.
And Gambit seems to notice this from the distance, and he is not pleased.
Yeah.
And it's like, because is he jealous that they might have a bond deeper than love? Or is he just concerned for Rogue's safety and well-being? Well, probably a little bit of both.
Yeah, right.
Right. So anyway, Archangel is fighting Apocalypse at the Statue of Liberty. Apocalypse smashes him into the Liberty Torch. Which is how apropos.
Right.
You know, the Liberty Torch catches fire, which is kind of cool, I guess, in a visual way. You know, it's a nice little throwaway symbolism there. And we get more classic Apocalypse lines throughout this episode. Every other sentence Apocalypse says is pretty awesome and epic. So, for instance, here he said something along the lines of, I've created a slave of you, one of courage and fire. And Archangel does not like to hear about this, how he's a slave or
yeah.
whatever. You know, the X-Men arrive on the scene. Oh, and this whole time, Archangel's constantly trying to flank Apocalypse and shoot at his back with his, like, metal-tipped arrows.
Yeah.
And it's not really going that well.
Right. Well, because, yeah, Apocalypse keeps, like, swatting him away before he can really,
right.
like, come around the back or...
And I have to say that watching this as a kid, I have very distinct memories of this episode. First of all, it was one of my favorite episodes as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. I love Archangel, first of all.
Yeah.
I love this, like, mid-90s design of Archangel. It all comes from the 80s, but whatever. This is, like, pink and blue outfit
yeah.
with the cool patterns on it.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, and his blue skin and his metal wings. I love the whole deal with
his
Archangel.
Endless feathers, feather daggers.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, I've told the story in the podcast before, I believe, but that was, like, the first and only... semi-savvy comic book purchase I made as a kid is I was at some garage sale, and they were selling the first appearance of Archangel in an X-Factor comic. Mm. And it was only $15, and I had $15.
Wow.
Yeah, and I bought it, and I thought I was, like, buying, like, a comic that was going to be worth millions. And it, I still think this day it's worth $15. So, who knows? But I was really into Archangel for some reason. I don't know why. And this episode just really excited me because, you know, as a kid, 10, 11 years old at the time, I didn't really, like, know all the backstories and all the characters, and I wasn't for certain that Apocalypse was invincible either.
Right.
I was like, oh my god, Archangel's discovered a weakness?
Yeah.
It's like, come on, shoot his back already, let's go. And there's something extra scary about Apocalypse, this idea that they present in this episode that he is invincible and eternal.
Right.
Or, you know, living forever, whatever it might be. And that, I found that really scary as a kid, that he's this villain with no weakness. Mm-hmm. And that he can't be stopped, and there's this, like, sense of hopelessness. And it's, and actually, it really showed how heroic the X-Men were. Because the X-Men know this. And
they, like, keep fighting anyway.
Yeah, they spring into action.
Yeah.
You know, they head right over to that Statue of Liberty to fight him. And oddly enough, you would think after the torch of the Statue of Liberty catches on fire that the harbor police would be somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe the military or the National Guard. But no, they're nowhere in sight. The X-Men are the only ones coming to defend this national monument.
Right. Well, this is like a divisive fight a little bit, though, because Archangel rushes over.
Yeah.
And, like, Rogue is like, all right, I gotta go help him. And she, like, flies away real quick. But, like, Cyclops has a plan. Cyclops, yeah, and Beast and Wolverine.
Well,
and they're like, Rogue, wait. Gambit's like, Rogue, don't rush off there. Like, we have a plan and you're part of it. And just, like, cool your jets because this guy's invincible.
I think you jumped the gun a little bit. That's the second, before the second fight. In this first fight, Rogue's part of the plan.
Right.
Yeah, so Rogue, like, is part of this, like, cool strategy the X-Men have where she, like, cannonballs into his legs.
Yeah.
That's actually really awesome.
Yeah.
That she she uses... I've never seen a flying character use their power like that, really. She tucks herself into a ball and hurls herself, like, flips herself through the air super fast.
Yeah.
So that knocks Apocalypse over. Gambit then slows his fall by blasting cars to the ground.
Right.
And Beast has, like, a big, like, metal chain that he's using to strap Apocalypse to
right,
the ground.
Wolverine's trying to, like, claw his way through.
But that's where the plan falls apart in my eyes. That, like, all right, so the plan was to get Apocalypse on the ground. Okay, good, you've trapped him. But now the plan is Wolverine's going to stab him.
Right.
And you think, like, as a kid, you're like, oh, well, Wolverine's got adamantium claws. That can cut through anything. Surely he could cut through Apocalypse. But they can't. Apocalypse is, like, more invincible than
Adamantium.
Right, than adamantium.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reasoning is he's got some kind of, I mean, the deep comic book reason, he was bestowed or he stole a suit of magical armor from these cosmic beings in the Marvel Universe called the Celestials,
mm-hmm.
and that's how he became all-powerful and stuff in ancient Egypt times. He, like, found, like, a crashed UFO or something. Like, I don't know the full backstory. I mean, that's generally what the backstory is. Facebook fans, if you want, you could give us the full detail, because it is actually a really cool story.
Yeah, it is.
It's worth checking out, like, the origin of Apocalypse.
Yeah.
And it's actually, I mean, you know, it's funny about the comic books, how there's always two eras in a comic book. There's the era where there's new characters and there's a lot of mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And in a comic book run, they'll draw out that mystery for a long time.
Yeah.
And so years will go by where you don't even really know, like, the character's name, like in the case of Gambit or Wolverine even.
Right.
But then, like, in an order, at some point,
there has to be, like, the big reveal.
Yeah, because they're trying to sell more comics. So it's like, now buy this comic where we tell you in excruciating detail Wolverine's entire backstory.
Yeah.
And his real name is not Logan after all, it's James. And you're like, what? And it's, like, way more disappointing. The reveal is way more disappointing than the mystery always.
Right.
You know, like, Gambit's backstory is, like, at one time finally revealed in the comics, and it's super complicated and ridiculous.
Yeah.
And, like, tied in with Mr. Sinister and, like, alternate shit going on. And same thing with Rogue, her backstory is revealed at some point, you know what I mean, like, an Apocalypse too. Although, like I said, I think Apocalypse's backstory is very cool and essential to the character.
Yeah.
And actually, I like that, like, he's got alien technology or something.
Uh-huh.
And then this episode deals with that. There's a lot of alien stuff going on too with him.
Yeah.
So, but they don't outright tell you what it is or, like, where it's from, you know. That, like I said, this is, like, the deep dive comic explanation tells you exactly.
Yeah, right.
And that, you know, and that's, like, another reason why the show's great, is because they were masters at hinting at stuff mm-hmm. without spoiling the whole kebab.
Right.
Like they
also, because they're not going to use like airtime to go into all the excruciating detail. It's like they really boil it down to the essential facts you need to know for character development right. and for the storyline to move along.
But they
leave it there.
Right.
And then if you're more interested, go buy the comic. Yeah. You know?
But they present it to me. It's always in a more satisfying way.
Yeah.
Than the comic that reveals everything, because the air of mystery is just always works well for dramatic
right.
and narrative, you know, storytelling.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have very easily. I don't think by the time the show was on the air that the full backstory of Wolverine was released yet, but they could have done their own version of it or backstory, but they never did. They'd always, like, just always hint at his origin.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, so back to this episode. Mm-hmm. The X-Men, they don't defeat Apocalypse here at Liberty Island. Again, with Apocalypse, it seems like he's very easily capable of just killing anyone or anybody he wants, including the pitiful X-Men.
Yeah.
But he just flies off.
Right.
And
which is really mysterious. Like, it would be so quick for him to just, like, kill anyone who's in his way. But
you know, it's funny you mentioned that. That just made me think that I guess if you live forever, it's less interesting if you just kill people right away. You want to have some fun.
Yeah.
And draw out moments.
Of, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
You want to preserve that same sense of mystery that we get from the comic books drawing it out for years.
Yeah,
like, he
yeah.
tries to do that for himself.
Yeah, like, he has to up the challenge for himself, I guess, maybe.
Yeah.
Right. So, but it is bizarre that he's always retreating from the X-Men.
Uh-huh.
Even though it's like he could really never lose to them. But so the X-Men... you know, they regroup, they take Archangel back to the mansion because he's been injured in this fight. At one point, actually, Apocalypse holds Archangel's hand and Cyclops blasts him by mistake, which was kind of a funny visual, I thought.
Yeah.
It's like, ouch. Mm-hmm. Back at the X mansion, you know, Rogue is really concerned for Archangel, and like we mentioned, Gambit is not pleased by...
seeing the twinkles passing between their eyes.
Right. And he's like, he's not worn anymore.
Yeah.
And then what does he call Archangel in French?
L'ange du mort. Yeah. He's like, the angel of death.
Yeah. He really, like, pours on the dramatization there. And Rogue, but she's too wrapped up in Warren Worthington, and Gambit is not, like, talking her down.
Yeah.
Her brain is too, like, moused up from all of that.
Yeah.
That's
a term that doesn't make sense to anybody. Inside joke, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. And then meanwhile, the X-Men are doing research, and they're using their Shi'ar technology, and they discover that Apocalypse lives on some kind of alien ship that's like a mile long in the sky,
mm-hmm.
and it's of alien origin. Professor X, who makes a brief appearance in this episode, says that, oh, it's been a myth for years that he's had an alien ship, one open to reason, which is bizarre.
Yeah.
How could that possibly be part of the myth?
Right.
But I guess it is. And it's also establishes that in the X-Men or the Marvel Universe, there are many, like, ships that are at least 1 mile long hovering around secretly in the skies. Because there's this one, the Apocalypse ship.
Yeah.
And there's also the S.H.I.E.L.D. ship.
Right.
That could cloak itself.
Right.
There might even be a few more cloaked vessels of massive size.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you want to go into the atmosphere a bit more, there's Asteroid M, Magneto's base.
That's right.
That's floating around. So there's like a lot of invisible objects of enormous size.
Well, hovering. It doesn't matter if they're high up enough. Nobody's going to see it. You just, like, you know, like, there's a billion satellites up there. There's tons of, like, stuff orbiting the Earth that humans have put there.
I know, but it's to me, but like I said, they're all, like, have this, I think the S.H.I.E.L.D. ship, too, is also, like, a mile in length or something as well.
Yeah.
They're all ginormous invisible vessels hovering over people's lives in
right.
the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny to imagine.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so, like, of course, Apocalypse has one himself.
Right.
So he's got the alien ship. So that's where the X-Men decide to make a plan. They're going to attack the ship and use it against Apocalypse. They need the whole team, but the whole team is not on board.
Right.
Archangel flies off. He wants revenge on his own terms. Rogue is compelled to follow him, and she does.
Sorry, I jumped the gun on all that.
Yeah, no, it's okay. It's a little... There's, like, multiple, like, plans of attack against Apocalypse here. It's a little bizarre. And then Gambit, like, runs off to follow them as well.
Right.
So the team, the only team members left are Cyclops, Wolverine, and Beast.
Yeah.
They get on the Blackbird. They're like, oh, well, I guess it's just us.
We'll go ahead with the plan, even though there's only three of us and we need five people.
Right. Storm, absent. Jubilee, absent. I guess Storm, she still might be recovering from her exhausting trip to the Shadowland, maybe.
Yeah.
Although, as we mentioned in previous episodes, the continuity is a little screwed up, so who knows where Storm is.
Right.
But Storm not involved in this episode.
And Jubilee, let's be honest, the missions go better when she's not there.
Right, and this is extremely dangerous. Maybe they've finally drawn the line somewhere of safety. Apocalypse could just, like, fall down and sit on her, and that'd be no more Jubilee. So the X-Men easily find the ship in the sky. I guess, well, I don't know, if they have the sheer technology, they can find it.
Mm-hmm.
And Beast begins his long, interesting relationship with this artificial intelligent spaceship.
Yeah.
He says, "Ship, may we board you?" And the ship's like, "Sure, why not?" It's like, that was nice of you to ask. And it turns out this ship is just really, pleased with that someone was polite to her.
Right. Beast is, like, complimenting her technology and stuff.
Right.
And she's really, like, amenable to helping them out with any kind of thing that they need help with.
It establishes that there's been this 7,000-year-long abusive relationship between the ship and Apocalypse.
Right.
And the ship's just, like, at last has met somebody that is not an asshole. And, yeah, so the ship, like, even though it belongs to Apocalypse, is more than happy to completely screw Apocalypse over. She gets right to work, right to business working with Beast, you know, translating things to English, showing him how to, you know, hack into the system. And Beast has come equipped with his hacking backpack and Google Glass eyewear. So he gets right to work hacking on the ship.
His hack pack?
Yeah, his hack. Oh, that's funny. His hack pack. I like it. And, you know, like, in the meantime, Archangel and Rogue are off trying to find Apocalypse again to fight him. And there's some, like, weird emotional manipulation going on with Archangel and Rogue.
Yeah.
You know, she's trying to, like, calm him down, and he's like, "No, you must pledge to me your heart and soul. Do you do it?"
And she's like, "Yeah."
Yeah, that's really ridiculous. She's like, "I guess." I mean, I've only met you, like, twice. It's been for 10 minutes at a time.
She's like, "I guess we do have a special bond, right. But what am I getting into?"
Yeah. So, you know, they find Apocalypse again. This time it's at, like, a carnival. And they start fighting him, and Gambit's flying in his yellow mini X-Jet.
Are they at Coney Island?
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. Why not? Let's say Coney Island. We're from Brooklyn. Why not? So they're fighting above Coney Island, and Gambit is flying his little X-Jet. He's trying to... again, a stupid scene where someone's flying in a plane and talking to someone who's flying themselves.
Right.
And carrying on a full conversation.
Yeah.
But whatever, it's funny. And he tells her, "You gotta stop this. This is crazy. You know, you're gonna get hurt. And there's people down there. They're gonna get hurt, too." So Gambit really taking a page out of the Cyclops book of being responsible.
Yeah.
Rogue's not really hearing it. She's like, "You don't know what I know. I gotta do this." And at last... Archangel, he gets a shot off. He manages to fly around and shoots Apocalypse's back.
Mm-hmm.
And I distinctly remember as a kid being extremely excited in this moment, thinking, "Oh, finally they got him." But no, he is fine.
Really? Because I remember being really disappointed watching that scene, because, like, that Ming Dynasty scroll shows, like, a really specific spot on the back of his neck that you have to get to.
Yeah.
And Archangel is just shooting, like, willy-nilly into his back.
Right.
And it's not in the spot where it indicated on that.
It's close enough, and there's many flying daggers.
Okay, but it's imprecise.
True.
And I noticed it. And I remember thinking, even as a kid, like, Apocalypse's, armor or clothing or whatever has this, like... high collar sort of deal, like, around his neck, so you can't really, like, see his neck. And I'm like, he knows he has that weak spot. He's hiding it with his,
like,
collar.
You're saying he should have, like, flown up above his head and shot down through the collar of his clothing there?
Yeah. I'm still not convinced that he doesn't have that weak spot.
Well, I mean, I hate to break it to you, but Apocalypse was behind the whole weak spot fraud. It was fake news.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Damn. Yeah, the whole scrolls were fake news. Apocalypse was that historian guy all along, which, like, opens up the question, like, what has Apocalypse been doing? He's just been trolling Archangel, like, this whole time. He's got, like, nothing better to do than to just trick him.
You know, but it comes back to what you said before. Like, he has, like, he has run of, like, the whole universe, right?
Well, the whole, well, I don't know, the whole universe, but the whole...
But whatever, like, he can go anywhere on Earth, and he can
he's
like,
got his interstellar spaceship.
He's got his spaceship, yeah. Like, he can go to other planets if he wants, and we've seen that there's, like, aliens on other planets and stuff like that, right? But it's, like, it just begs this question of, like, how long does it take for you to get, like, super bored if you're this, like, immortal being? It's like you're flying around in the stars, or you're like roaming the Earth, and it's like, what are you going to do with yourself after all these millennia pass? Like, all
right. I mean, the implication is that Apocalypse has conquered the Earth many times, actually.
Right.
That he's conquered ancient Egypt. He's conquered like ancient Babylon, maybe even ancient China at points. And like, I guess at some points he just gets tired of it, and I don't know.
Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, too easy.
Yeah, because I mean, he's ruling over the humans. He's not at certain points, like, Apocalypse wants everyone to die.
Yeah. And sometimes he wants everyone to be subservient to him.
Yeah, so it's, like, unclear. Like, you know, with the whole Four Horsemen plot in the first season, his plan was that he only wanted the strong to survive, to have, like, a new breed and to remake the Earth. So maybe that's why Apocalypse stopped ruling over the, like, pitiful ancient Egyptians, because they're just humans. Like, what can they do?
Right.
They're not, like, super-powered mutants. I guess, you know, maybe it took him a long time to do some, like, biogenetic experiments to get, you know, to create, you know, mutant hybrid powered people.
Right.
Although, you know, we've seen many times in the comic books and the movies that mutants have been around in one form or another, you know, throughout various times.
Yeah.
And Apocalypse is one of them. So, although he's technically the first mutant.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Although in the X-Men Apocalypse movie, he's got like a gang of like mutant people helping him.
Yeah.
Anyway, but whatever, that movie is not, you know, doesn't amount to a hill of beans, really. So we'll talk about that one day. So they're having this fight with Apocalypse. But meanwhile, back on the ship, Beast is becoming friends with this ship. He concocts some plan that they're going to, like, capture Apocalypse in kind of something like energy force field disc. And there'll be no way for him to escape. Apocalypse returns to the ship. And he gets trapped in this thing, and but he's kind of chill about it at first. He's laughing and says, "Ha ha ha, Beast! What do you think? This is a big joke." And it was all a trap all along. He's set an explosive device, and but the X-Men, with the ship's help, they work to disarm the explosive or find the explosive device, throw it out of the ship, it explodes, and Apocalypse does an override, and he breaks out of the force field. So, you know, he's just been trying to trick them, too.
Right.
And it's, like, weird that he has to resort to tricks to kill them. Yeah. He could just squash them at any time.
Easily.
Right. So, you know, but like we said, it just must be that he...
The drama factor.
Right, yeah. He's lived too long. It's too easy for him just to kill people. Uh-huh. He needs to kill them in a very satisfying way. Oh, I skipped over a good Apocalypse line when he's fighting Rogue earlier.
Mm-hmm.
He says something like... What does he say here? I have it written down. He says, "Serve me, and you shall know Oblivion's eternal bliss." So I wanted to break that line down a little bit. So you serve Apocalypse, you become a slave.
Uh-huh. And you become immortal.
You get the gift of Oblivion's eternal bliss. But so are you... Oblivion to me has a negative connotation.
Yep.
But what makes it eternally blissful?
Just being, that you're being, alive all the time? I don't know.
But you would think that the eternal bliss of Oblivion would be death. But you're right. If you become Apocalypse's slave, you live forever.
So you're a zombie? So he kills you and then you come back as a zombie forever?
Okay, so that's what it is.
Forever?
You're like, your soul is dead, but you get the bliss of being a zombie? That's what he means. Your soul's dead, you get to, when you're a zombie, it's bliss. Alright, so I think that's the only thing that could possibly be. And so, and also in the meantime, when they've got Apocalypse in this force field temporarily, Apocalypse lets out another funny line. He says, "Beast, you're no closer than the Babylonians with their swords and fire sticks." Ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
And I think that does speak to what we're hinting at here, that it's too easy for Apocalypse, that, you know, the Babylonians probably amassed an army against him, but when all they've got are just, like, bows and arrows and stuff, like, what can they do against...
I mean, maybe the whole fight thing for him is very... it's like affirming his narcissism or something, you know. He just views all of these humans, even the mutants that are like the most powerful of the humans, are like Babylonians with sticks, you know. They're like little ants to him.
So
and
he
he's
has
just
to,
like really getting this like gratification, this like huge sense of power and ego.
It's like he mainlines narcissism like it's cocaine. He like has to snort it constantly to feel good about himself, because otherwise his life is really empty and sad, you know. Like, I think that's actually a good like character observation there that you hinted at.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, no, definitely that, like, yeah, like he can't, he has to keep like making himself feel superior to others in order to get like a sense of pleasure in his existence. Because obviously his existence is pretty lonely and, you know, empty. He can't form relationships with people. They'll just die and he'll live on forever.
It's lonely at the top.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, he has another really badass line along the way here. He says, "I am the rocks of the eternal shore. Crash against me and be broken." And that's gotta be from something, right?
Biblical? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. But that's too awesome writing for this show. I'm the rocks of the eternal. I'm going to tell it to people. I'm the rocks of the eternal shore. Crash against me, broken, bro.
The delivery is...
It's not the same.
No. Okay.
Right. So, you know, Apocalypse breaks free, but the ship still wants to help Beast. And Apocalypse, he sort of just, like, you know, he's just sort of laughing along, but the X-Men are trying their best to stop him. And, but Beast is hacking away. And there's, like, a funny exchange between Beast and Rogue. Well, what happens is the force field comes back up. Mm-hmm. And Apocalypse is trapped again, and he's quite surprised. Rogue tells Beast, she's like, "You defeated Apocalypse's override code?"
She's real impressed with his smarts.
Yeah, it's just weird that... it's just, like, a funny... like, it's almost like out of Hackers or something.
Yeah. All,
randomly.
Right.
That Rogue's, like, saying, you know... it's like, "You've hacked the planet, Beast."
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a good Hacker's quote. I can't think of one right now.
No, but she's, like, real impressed with his computerizing.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone watch Hackers. It's hilarious. From the same time as the X-Men the Animated Series.
That's true.
Right. A lot of the same techno jargon going on in that show. And weird, you know, Hackers, one of the few movies that shares a bizarre fashion sense with the X-Men universe, I must say.
That's true, actually.
Right. Like, everyone's wearing, like, weird, like, brightly colored, shiny leather outfits.
Yeah.
And has, like...
except it's, like, real live. It's, like, live action instead of cartoon, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Apocalypse is trapped, and... the ship sort of starts self-imploding on itself for some reason. Like, all the, like, metal qubits of it are, like, rising up and crashing into each other, trapping some of the X-Men.
Yeah.
And
I thought that was, like, part of the programming as, like, a containment unit sort of thing, like, for safety.
Well, Apocalypse himself, like, he's in the force field, and then he's, like, entrapped in this weird, like, escape pod.
Yeah.
And then we see later his fate is the escape pod is launched from the ship itself and launched into outer space with a little twinkle.
Yeah.
And he's shouting, "I'll be back!" And the ship's like, yeah, he's gonna come back.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know what the ship is doing, like, why the ship is blowing up. We might have missed that detail. I know at one point Archangel blew into the command center and, like, hurt it.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't seem to really have an effect on it at the time. So I'm not sure why the ship itself is, like, crashing into the harbor, unless Apocalypse said something that we missed where he's causing it to self-destruct.
Yeah. Well, because the ship starts, like, giving command... No, Apocalypse, like, blows up the computer, right? And then the ship starts, like, helping Beast, like, giving commands to all the different X-Men. Like, you, like, blow this...
No, that was earlier when they were throwing out the explosive device.
Ah,
yeah,
man.
You really... Sonya's still getting over her illness. So her brain's a little jumbled up here.
Yeah. That flu fever really burned out
you
some
got
of my
hit
neurons.
Yeah, you got hit hard by...
All right. Anyway.
That's okay. Yeah, I missed the detail, too. I'm not sure why the ship is blowing itself up. But that's fine. But they do manage to escape the ship. Gambit, at one point, there's a cool scene where he's trapped in, like, some walls of the ship, and he sticks his hands on it to, like, blow it up. Like, he puts his hand on a surface, and the surface gets charged up with his energy.
Yeah.
But then it doesn't work. Like, it gets drawn back into him.
Yeah.
But I just think it's cool, because I've always wondered if Gambit could just, like, put his hands on your house and just, you know,
like make light the whole, up the whole thing.
Yeah, and make the whole thing explode.
Yeah.
Because that's,
I guess the answer is yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
As long as it's not made of space metal.
Right, yeah, interstellar space metals, alien metals.
Yeah.
But the X-Men, they manage to escape. They get in the Blackbird and fly away. Beast still has, like, he managed to take, like, a piece of the AI's mainframe, which is this cool little, like, stone tablet thing with, like
but it's like a LED touch screen. Lights.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And he knows how to use it somehow.
Yeah, and it's got the ship's brain on it, and somehow has speakers on it because it's speaking to Beast, too.
Yeah.
It's like, I love you, Beast. You were my only friend. And Rogue feels really bad about Beast's friend dying. And Beast is, like, destroyed by this.
Yeah, he's, like, crying at the end.
Yeah, he balls up in tears in the Blackbird console there. And yeah. He's just crying.
He really made a techno friend.
Yeah, this is really bizarre, actually, that he's, like, fallen in love with this thing really fast.
Well,
and maybe they, too, have a bond deeper than love. Man, all these X-Men characters.
I don't think so. I think Xavier is the only one.
He's the only one. But why is Beast crying after meeting this ship for 10 minutes?
I don't know. Not because of bond deeper in love, I don't think.
Well, what is it then? He's really taking it badly.
I don't know.
I mean, Beast is just really woke because he just knows that artificial intelligence, you know, has its own, you know, rights and consciousness, and he's, like, way ahead of the game there. He is not going to be an evil engineer one day that subjects an AI to be somebody's slave. Mm-hmm. He's going to give it, like, he's going to hand it the Bill of Rights and be like, you can vote in an election.
Yeah.
I'll read you my Miranda rights if you break the law. It's like he's woke when it comes to AI. So, and then, you know, he says goodbye, my friend, and like we said, ship crashes into the ocean, it's dead, Apocalypse is blasted into space, he'll be back, and Beast is crying, end of episode. So, pretty good episode, right?
Yeah, it was a great one.
Very action-packed, didn't leave us much room for too much analysis there, because there's too many action beats to cover.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like, it's like, it shows what you could do when you carry on these serialized storylines where you've already got other characters and their backstories and how they're going forward in the future with Archangel and, you know, how he's reacted since we've last seen him and, you know, this continuing threat of Apocalypse and all the trouble he's up to.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe when Apocalypse returns, it's going to be, like, the most epic set of episodes yet.
Hmm.
So, but that's going to be in season 4, and that'll be quite thrilling. And it's the Beyond Good and Evil storyline, for those who might know. That's going to be a blast covering. It's so ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Just all the things Apocalypse says about time and time travel and the space-time continuum and all these sorts of crazy things.
Yeah.
All stuff I still hold to this day are true. Everything Apocalypse says in those episodes are true. And I tend to think everything he says in general is true in some deep, like, philosophical level. Everything he has to say about eternity and oblivion and, you know,
zombies,
right, being eternal, yeah. Slavery, all, like, sorts of weird shit he's into. All right, so an excellent episode, a great one-off, although part of a continuum in itself.
Yeah.
Very exciting. Season 3 back in full strength after a bit of a letdown with No Mutants in Ireland in the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Although that one kind of like a bizarre outlier episode anyway, as we discussed previously.
Yeah. No, but I really like this episode. And I really, like you said, like Apocalypse is always a really good villain to see because it's like all these other villains that they're fighting have like these obvious weaknesses and like Apocalypse really doesn't have too much of a weakness. Like, he's an interesting villain because he is, like, the outlier. He's so undefeatable. But I guess we've, like, delved into his motivations a little bit. And really, like, that's his one thing.
Yeah, it's a good character study.
Yeah.
I didn't think going into talking in this podcast that we would get to that point of realizing it. But I think we've convinced ourselves that, like, all the weird, like, stuff going on in this episode, you know, we could chalk it all up to interesting character work.
Mm.
Okay, so, I mean, that's all I've got for this episode. Happy Thanksgiving out there to everyone. I hope you had a good one. Happy birthday again to you, Sonia.
Thanks.
May you have many more years of blissful
Oblivion?
Oblivion, eternally. May you know Oblivion's sweet eternal bliss. I want to remind all of our followers to follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Join the Facebook group, X-Men Task Podcast. Just search us out on Facebook there. Also, to rate us 5 stars on iTunes and leave a review. That goes a long way towards getting people aware of our show. And we really, you know, like I said, no one really cares, but I mean, I'm the only one who really cares. You don't even care. But, like, we do keep managing to get more downloads every week, and it is, like, freaking awesome. It's so exciting, and it's just really nice to feel the love in that respect. So let's keep the trend going. So whatever you guys are doing out there is great. I'm real happy the show's getting out there. It might have something to do with that. It is like the 25th anniversary of the X-Men TAS show. Mm-hmm. And the book is out there, Previously on X-Men by Eric Lewald. Follow him and his wife Julia on Twitter at X-Men TAS. They're original writers of the show. They're awesome people. And we're still reading that book, and it's really fun and interesting.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, so I mean, it's like bizarre. Like, when we started this podcast, it was totally on a lark. And we had no, like, awareness that it was the 25th anniversary.
Yeah, really.
It just, like, weirdly dawned on us. I think when we were talking to Eric and Julia Lewald for the first time, when they sort of mentioned, like, that's why the book's coming out. We're like, oh, really? Oh, my God. So it was, like, good timing on our part. So maybe there's, like, a lot of good X-Men awareness out there. Maybe that's why people are finding the show.
Yeah, maybe.
I was listening to another podcast. I think it's called Raised on TV.
Yeah.
It's by two of my favorite comedians, John Gambris and Lauren Lapkus. And they're like two, like, you know, maniac comedians around our age. And they just talk about all the TV shows they loved as a kid. And, you know, they just like make a bunch of jokes about them, you know, be it like Nickelodeon or cartoons or sitcoms from the 90s. Mm-hmm. And just how obsessed we all were with television at that time. Like, I think it is kind of really specific to our generation. Like, maybe we're like the last generation of where everyone watched TV and you didn't really have a choice about like what you want to watch, because there's no YouTube, no Netflix or anything. There's no like streaming.
Yeah.
It was just like you had to gather around the TV and watch whatever's there.
Right.
And we were all zombies to it.
Yeah.
So that podcast talks about it. And then I read an interview with them talking about like why they think their show is appealing to people.
Mm-hmm.
And it really struck a chord with me and what I think we're doing with our show, which is they say that in times like today, where the news is terrible and it's just such gloomy bleakness,
uh-huh.
that there's something magical when you talk about television shows from your childhood, because when you access those memories, it puts you in your kid mindset where you were just like a kid in your underpants watching TV, eating like Kix cereal,
mm-hmm.
and having no cares in the world. And, like, going to bed and just dreaming about what TV shows you'd watch the next day and having, like, no other concerns. So when you talk about this stuff, it's just, like, a great, like, callback to that.
Nostalgic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, in a time like this where the world just fucking sucks now, it's just, like, great to access those memories and to, like, remember what it was like to laugh. And to have no cares. So, I love that show. Everyone should check that out, Raised on TV. I have a insane, bizarre dream that they'd have me as a guest one day and I could talk about X-Men. I don't think that's ever going to happen, but I'm just putting it out there in the universe. I tweeted John Gambris all the time about, you know, his show, saying how much I like it and stuff. And I've actually mentioned that I have the X-Men podcast, and he liked that tweet. So maybe he's, like, in the fringes of his busy life as a semi-popular comedian.
It's going to seep in.
Maybe. And actually, Lauren Lapkus, when I used to, me and my friends in my early 20s, we used to make a whole bunch of comedy videos. We were like in the UCB scene and everything, and knew a lot of people from way back when. And we had this whole production we made. It was called Greg's Party. And it never got finished. It was such a shame because it was like a really great idea. We filmed all 8 episodes of it. I got a script. We filmed it for like a year in our apartment. And it was going to have like special effects and green screen and soundtrack that we wrote and stuff. But we just like when it was all done, we couldn't find a special effects guy we could afford to do all those green screen shots. And it was just sat dormant forever. So it was a shame. But in the midst of that, we invited many UCB comedians to our apartment to do minor roles, and one of them was Lauren Lapkus, who is like has become the most famous of all the people we knew back then, because she's been in like movies like Jurassic World, and she's been on sitcoms, and she's very popular and famous if you knew her from like know her from Comedy Bang Bang. And if you go on my Twitter feed and look in like the media section, you can see pictures I posted, like this proof that she was in my apartment at one point. It's pretty cool. That's a long divergent tangent here about a free plug for a show that doesn't even know we exist, but that's okay. So that's all I have to say. If you're still listening, we love you all, and we will see you next week. Sonia, any last words?
No, I screwed up enough things for today. I gotta go lay down.
It's okay. It's your birthday. Happy birthday, Sonia.
Thanks.